so, what did you observe? What did you experience? And what did you learn from that experiment? Name? Your name?
Michael.
Michael.
It seemed as if I realized that a lot of the coming back patterns are themselves conditioned.
That the coming back patterns are conditioned?
Yes.
You mean when you come out of a daydream?
Realizing and then coming back to the breath itself is a conditioned
thing. Habit. Yeah. So, that the technique has become a habit, a mindless habit. Is this productive? I think that's a good observation. I think that's what we do see, is that a lot of our practice has become the application of technique quite mindlessly. Is that good? Is that being fully aware?
I also noticed that it went through like this sense of doing and a doer when I would, you know, feel myself going to a technique, and then I'd say, hey. You know, let's see. And it was just a much more, spacious experience.
Spacious, it being a more spacious experience, meaning it was less like you were doing something.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like experience is happening and you're just there with it and you weren't doing anything about it.
Right. And so it was that when I noticed I was going back to a technique or a strategy, and that sense within my body of a contraction or a sense of self coming to fore, then I say, just like
right.
Yeah, so just to open and notice, and I don't have to do anything.
So when you found yourself applying a technique, is when you yourself kind of got activated. Oh, I'm doing something. And then when you could notice that and stop doing it, so to speak, or just not do it, then the awareness was still there?
Mm-hmm.
Who was doing that? Name?
Jason.
Why do you go to a technique? Is because you're bored?
No. Reaction is
boredom.
I see reactions.
Yeah.
I've never had that experience.
Never had boredom experience before?
Not really.
Huh.
I mean, not sitting down.
Yeah, meditating, yeah. Yeah.
Then I kind of let go of that, and it's kind of more exhilarating to feel like without having to return to the technique, I kind of feel the rising waves of my experience. And I got a lot out of it. I felt like I was much more present with my experience. I've experienced a lot of pain. I hurt myself recently. And just sitting with that, instead of trying to adjust it and be
So you felt that you were more riding the experience, riding along with your experience, rather than trying to do something with your experience, like practicing with. Yeah. Okay. Any other options? Yeah.
I thought it was really hard to be with restlessness without doing, like, the more I tried to not just react to that, the more it got louder.
So you felt restless, and you wanted to do something with it.
Yeah, just shift, little adjustments, all the things that I unconsciously do. And
so when you didn't do that, what happened?
It
built up a little pressure cooker.
It said, move,
Increases
volume.
Okay. This is a good comment, because you said that he felt restless, and, you know, he would normally have just kind of adjusted and made some, you know, moves to kind of avoid it, maybe. Yeah. Mm. But when you didn't do that, then the intensity of the experience just got much louder. I want to comment on that experience, because I had something similar where it's just like there were times when I wouldn't activate the technique, there was just a heightening of attention in a way. It's like kind of getting closer to what was just going on right then. And this is actually a buildup of mental energy, which is actually a good thing in practice, because as we practice awareness and we come out of our habits and our usual way of dissipating our mental energy, we build up our energy. We contain ourselves. We don't act out, and we build up our mental energy, and it does get intense. It's just like, it gets more intense and more intense. And if you can still sustain awareness of it, your awareness gets really strong, really continuous, almost not really explosive, but just like it's right on the moment. Initially, that kind of buildup of mental energy can feel really unpleasant, like, but if you learn how to open to that, not try to control it, not try to keep it down, but just open to it and kind of let the channels of your body open up that can handle that much energy, then you'll see awareness really brightens. That energy really brightens the mind a lot. And I think for those of you who've been on retreat, you know that as you go into a retreat, you know, on day two or three, you start to get more mental energy. And sometimes it gets so intense, you know, you just gotta act it out. You just it feels like you need to dissipate it. But if you can find a way to just handle, be with, open to that amount of energy, it builds up a tremendous amount of energy. Why is it important to build up this mental energy? Well, because it takes this much energy that kind of energy to withstand the let me back up. It takes energy to break habits. It takes energy to break habits. Because habits are a way of just dissipating energy. You just dissipate energy unconsciously. And when you don't act out your habits, you build up a tremendous amount of energy. And you can see them. You can see what's going on in your unconscious behavioral stuff. And it's that kind of energy that's needed to break through the narrative of the mind, which keeps you locked in to the same old story. It takes that much energy. Otherwise, your same old story of who you are, what you can do, what you can't do, and I can't tolerate this, and I won't, and it just goes on and on and on, until you build up so much energy that you then see that, and it's like, you see it, or you see through it, really. You see through it. That this is just a story, and there's this whole other thing going on outside of that story. So when you start having experience outside of the narrative of your own personal life, then you really start to have some insight. I never said it like that before, but it seems 85%, I'd say. Yeah.
My back hurts. I have to move a little bit. I try not moving, and then my back really hurts.
Yeah. It's okay to move. We do relieve some pressure. I mean, I probably should have said, now he tells me. you can move. but what, I'm glad I didn't, actually, because when you don't move, it does build up a lot of, well, intensity. And if it's unpleasant, it's painful. And if it's pleasant, it's ecstatic. And if it's awareness, then it's very just, you know, just sees through things. You know, a lot of, in general, the understanding in practice is still body, still mind. Restless body, restless mind. And there are some teachers, Goenka in particular, I don't know if he still does, I imagine so, where, and certainly Robert Hubbard used to, where you take vow hours. You just make a vow to sit, absolutely, not move intentionally for the hour. And of course, within seconds, you're, it's intolerable, you know, and then good luck. And, you know, I have done this, and I've seen others do this, that, you know, sometimes it's an hour, sometimes it's an hour and a half, some 2 hours. 2 hour of hour sitting is, you know, you can just be sweating bullets, just drenched in sweat because, well, it's not because of pain, it's because of developing that much energy in the mind. It's like, practice is a way of developing the capacity to handle the energy that is available in the mind. And if you don't dissipate it through talking, thinking, moving, whatnot, it's available. That energy is available to see things clearly, see through the illusions, the delusions, the concepts of what it is we're doing. And so, you know, the format of retreats and the format of even the sitting is designed to give you a taste of, to learn how to build up that energy. So I encourage you to take some periods of time where you just say, I'm not going to move. Just don't move and see what happens. I wouldn't do it all the time because then it gets into a grit your teeth indoor sometimes, you know. And there's a time and place for that, but not all the time to do that. Yeah.
I was really amazed at how much doing I've been doing. I knew that there was some of that, but I just really hadn't realized. And how familiar it is, like how it's just the same thing that I do out there that I'm sitting here to not do. And I'm, you know, I'm applying, I have the same kind of agenda of like, you know, applying some skill that I've learned from this book and this retreat to this to make it basically to fix it, you know, to dissolve it or make it go away or understand it or do something with it.
Sure.
In the interest of changing it somehow.
Yeah.
And so this, just that, just like stepping out of agenda altogether was, I'm just really struck by how different that was. And then watching the mind like start to want to do. It just became hilarious after a little while of like, wow, it's so relentless. You know, just kept trying and trying to come up with techniques for doing better.
A technique of not doing.
If I thought of it this way, then I would really, you know, it was really interesting.
Yeah. And yet we know, thank you for that. I think a lot of us see that, you know, that it's like our practice is just one technique-y reaction after another to kind of handle, deal with, explain, fix, adjust thing. And when we see ourselves doing that, sometimes we can just unplug it and we realize that awareness occurs not because of a technique. Awareness happens. It's not because we do a technique that awareness happens. Sometimes when we stop techniquing, we're just as aware as when, or maybe more aware than when we were techniquing. And I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, techniques are really useful. They're really beneficial to know techniques, to know a range of techniques, and to know when to use them and when not to use them. Yeah. Because there are a lot of difficult, challenging conditions that we want to engage in practice at times. And there are other times we want to let them, we want to stay aware and watch them play themselves out too. You know, sleepiness, for example. sleepiness in the beginning of practice with sleepiness, if you don't use a technique, you just snooze. You just, you know, so you sit up straighter, you open your eyes, you pull your earlobes, you do all those things, you do this, you walk faster, you pay more attention, you note louder, there's all kinds of things you can do to deal with sleepiness. But at some point, when there's some ongoing recognition of mindfulness, there's some ongoing momentum of mindfulness, don't do anything with sleepiness. When it comes, just be aware of that. And you'll be surprised at how mindful you can be of terrain of the mind less than fully awake and clear, but not yet fully asleep, not dreaming. There's a lot of terrain. There's a lot of terrain in the mind between what we call normal wakefulness, and on the other end of that is aware wakefulness, and what is sleep or dreamless sleep on this end. There's all this terrain of the mind that's, you know, hypnagogic, it's trance-like, it's dull, it's non-perceptual awareness. There's just all kinds of stuff in there which you can be aware of. But if you think, oh, every time you feel a little bit sleepy, I've got to sit up and do this, you'll miss that whole, you just will avoid that whole terrain of the mind. So, technique is good to know how to, know what to do, when to do, how to do, but it's also good to not do so that you learn this terrain of the mind. You'll learn about the nature of trance-like states, the nature of non-perceptive awareness, or the nature of, you know, when the cognitive chatter stops and you're just with the stillness of non-cognitive activity of mind. That's really fascinating. But it's, you know, it's thrown into the pot with, oh, sleepiness, dullness. So. Anything else you want to share about, yeah?
Experience. I think this is interesting. I'm Todd. When you instantly said, oh, did you close your eyes and stuff like that? So that was a great, you know, awareness right away. So then I did eventually close my eyes and I felt, wanting to be busy. And it was almost like being a lion tamer in the pen and I was looking around for the lion. I mean, it got really intense, like, where is it? Where is it? And then it was almost like a trap door fell and my whole body just went and landed into another spot. And it was just a whole different sensation in the body. And then that happened a few times where it would just like build up and then drop and release. So it was a unique experience.
And so when it would build up and build up with this type of hyper-vigilant, where is it? And then you drop. Were you still aware in this? Did it take a while to kind of reorient to this new space after you dropped through or whatever?
It took a little bit, yeah, but I felt pretty aware
present.
Of it. I was
yeah.
Like, oh, wow, I can relax.
And still be present.
Yeah, and then I feel it building up, and I say, well, I don't have to do anything, and it was like...
Yes. There's a lot of dropping in practice. Some of it's quite literally where you're up here just trying to do, and then you just, what the hell with it? Oh, you just drop in. But there's also just dropping into deeper layers of the mind that occurs very similar to that. You know, where you're just going along at a certain level of the mind, and you just drop into overdrive, which is like, wow. Everything just ratchets down kind of suddenly. Not that you do anything, but it just opens up into a different energy level, in a way. Mm. Yeah. Any other comments to share?
Steve.
Yeah.
I did an experiment with the experiment, which was, because I tend to have thoughts arise a lot, so what I did was when a thought arose, I like consciously kept thinking it, and but was mindful of
thinking.
It was continual. Yeah, yes. It would kind of go away. I mean, it was sort of interesting. I also, you couldn't think of it.
You should try that more often, Steve.
I think it would have been my convincing, you know. actually, if you really pay attention.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. If you do pay attention, thoughts don't last long. Yeah.
So this is interesting. You were sort of saying that these techniques can be co-opted as yet another resistance to just...
Techniques can be conditioned. You know, we learn when to use a technique. Huh? And so we get conditioned that as soon as this sensation arises in the body, we do this. And then we find ourselves doing this without having noticed that sensation in the body. Or as soon as a certain mental state arises, a feeling of discontentment or some unpleasant mental state, we start over. You know, and we find ourselves starting over without having taken note of the unpleasant mental state that conditioned it. That's important to notice. So, yeah, co-opted or the conditioning just gets built in, automatic pilot. Yeah. Unfortunately. But now the end question is, can mindfulness be a habit? It depends really on what you mean by habit, doesn't it? Because when we talk about habits, we often think, oh, it's kind of an unconscious, automatic pilot habit. And of course, mindfulness cannot be an unconscious habit, because by definition, it's being aware. But there can certainly be a momentum of awareness that just carries on by itself without you having to apply a lot of intentional effort. So it has a feeling of momentum and habit, but it's not unaware habit.
Or you can be aware of that habit.
Aware of the habit of being mindful. Right. Yes. Yep. That would, you know, it would, changing the definition of habit then. Yeah. Yeah. It's 3:00. Thinking ahead. Thinking. Some of you are just here for today. And some of you are here for the first time practicing with me. How many are here just for today? Please hold your hand up so I can see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Okay. And now, how many others of you, not among those, are here for the first time practicing with me? Another whole group. Okay. Thank you. I want to break in a minute, and I want to meet with that first group, people who are here just for today, in that room over there, while the others of you are walking for 30 minutes or so. But first, there's a couple of announcements. One is, I put out on the table some postcards announcing a retreat that we're having in Maui in April. But since you've had a mild winter here this winter, maybe you don't need a tropical interlude. But nevertheless, it is pretty nice there. So you can just take it home as a reminder. Just put it in your mirror somewhere. Secondly, I also put out a flyer there on a retreat that I'm offering, Kamal and I are offering at Cloud Mountain in early October. No, September. Can't remember. September. Late September. It's an Abhidharma retreat. Abhidharma is the Buddhist psychology. And we will be also co-teaching, or another man will be teaching with us, named Ula Min. And he's a former monk from Burma who's written a couple of Abhidharma books himself, and speaks very good English, and has helped me translate some Burmese books. And I thought it would be a good opportunity for those of you who have questions that I can't answer, he can. And so he'll be helping us teach that. And for those of you who haven't had exposure to the Abhidharma, sometimes people get a little bit intimidated by it, because it's, you know, if you picked up an Abhidharma book, it's like a reference manual, and it's not easy to read, it's very difficult to slog through. But on that retreat, there will be some sitting in silence each day, and some study and presentation of the Abhidharma in a way that and limited to the material of the Abhidhamma that really supports practice and understanding your practice. There's a lot in the Abhidhamma that is fascinating and interesting, but doesn't really help you in your day-to-day practice. So that will be the least of our interest. Most of our interest will be in how to understand, what to understand of the Abhidhamma that really supports practicing like this. So if you're interested in that, give that a thought. And then, thirdly, these events, like this weekend, sponsored by SIMS, are possible because so many people volunteer to run the thing. And there's several of you that are setting it up, and people here who have been or are on the board of directors, and the two who are hosting us doing the announcing, and people who run the sound system, and there's just a tremendous amount of volunteer effort to make it possible. And I know that SIMS charges or suggests a rate of registration fee for coming to the retreat for those who can pay, and for those who can't, will come anyway. And this is a great policy. I really want to thank SIMS for paying its way and allowing everybody else to come for free, or what they can afford, because the Dharma is just invaluable. And through the volunteer efforts of many of you, or all of you in some ways, we all get a chance, and those who wouldn't normally have a chance because of finances or whatever, do get that opportunity. And part of this whole thing is my being here. SIMS, from the money that you have paid for registration, SIMS will reimburse me for my travel expenses, airfare and a hotel to get here, and things like that. And it'll get me back home. And I appreciate that. I wouldn't be able to come, of course, if they didn't. And then we have some guests, or I have some friends who host me while I'm here to help keep the cost down for SIMS also, and I think them for that. However, my teaching here is, as all of you know, probably, is on a volunteer basis, on a freely offering basis. It seems amazing to me that all the teaching I received for years from Western teachers before I ever went to Burma, and the 5 years that I spent in the monastery in Burma, didn't cost me anything. It's just amazing that, you know, there are those among us who so value the Dharma being available and accessible to others that they will make it freely available. And in Asia, it's phenomenal. You can go to any monastery, where Westerners can go, and just stay and practice. And while that is not yet possible here in the West, yet it will be in the near future, where the centers, the major centers and the minor centers will have the option, if not for everyone, for at least some people, on each retreat to attend freely, because there are others among us who are able to support that. And I'm able to come here because in the past, many of you and many others have supported me to be able to do this. And I appreciate that very much. I value the Dharma, of course, and I value the relationship with the students that allows me to offer you freely what I've heard, what I've practiced, what I've understood, what I've realized, and to not have to charge a fee and only sell it to those who can afford or want to pay. And so for me, it's a great way of life, really, a great lifestyle, to be able to freely offer what I enjoy doing to those of you who are interested. And I'm only able to do this because there'll be those among you today or this weekend who will offer your appreciation in the form of financial gifts, and it'll allow me to go for another month or two. And I want to thank you in advance for your gifts. When you make a donation or a gift to me through Vipassana Metta Foundation or personally, I do not consider it income or even my money. It just isn't in my thinking to consider it that way. I do use it, and I and Kamala use it to, you know, pay our personal expenses. You know, we're paying a mortgage on the center that we're creating in Maui, and we do use it to provide for our own food and utilities and things like that at home. But a large part of it goes to back into the Sangha in the form of supporting scholarship funds most places that we go, supporting students, individual students who appeal to us for opportunities to practice, to supporting our teachers, both in the States and in Asia, and supporting other centers that we feel are doing the good work that supports many of you. And, you know, we've translated the Burmese Manual of Insight that hopefully will get published before I pass away. I've been talking about this thing for 10 years. Eventually it will get out there. And just other supporting what we feel will be a contribution to the Sangha here in the West. So whatever donations you receive is just passes through. And I guess I'll be able to do that as long as I'll be able to do that. Other than that, well, I'll just have to sit under a tree. Which is what the Buddha said, you know, there are those trees and the roots of trees, sit. And do not be negligent lest you regret it later. So, there's more that could be said, but thank you very much for whatever gifts of support you offer. I really appreciate your generosity, and we'll use it to the best of my ability to support the growth of the Dharma Sangha here in the West. It was mentioned last night, and it was mentioned earlier today, I think, too, when introduced, that I have support a lot of, through me, others support a lot of activities, especially nunneries and building schools in Burma. And this is another whole activity that I'm engaged in. But your donations to me today, none of this goes to the Burma Schools Project. That is something separate, and I don't appeal to students for funds for the Burma Schools Project. Some people hear about it, find out about it, and send money or inquire, and that's fine if that's your interest. But I'm not at this time appealing, and nor do we apply the donations that we receive to the school project other than our own time. But we have built many schools and are supporting a number of nunneries, and there's a couple of sitting groups here in Seattle who send their monthly donations to us to support a couple of different nunneries, and I want to thank those of you who are here who do that. The nuns really appreciate it. And it's a great joy to be able to go there and to have that kind of relationship with them and to see them really benefit from their American sponsors, if you will. Really nice. So, thank you. It's 3:15, so for a half hour, I'd like to meet with that first group of people that are only here for today in that room there. And the others of you, please get some movement with awareness. And we'll come back at 4:15 for another short sitting and rounding, ending discussion. Okay? I was reflecting during that sitting. I was aware that I was reflecting during that sitting that it takes a lot of trust to just sit and watch your mind go by. With the belief or the hope that it is beneficial somehow. Because so much of what goes by is familiar. It's going by again and again and again. And it doesn't, it's not immediately clear that it's changing or that your life is better for having observed it or anything else. And so I was just reflecting on how in my own practice today and in a lot of the sittings, it's like there's nothing, I don't expect anything out of my sitting. I don't expect to see anything. I don't expect any insight. I don't expect any change. I don't expect anything other than, well, I'm just going to sit here and try to pay attention. That's all. And I think, now, what else in life am I willing to do that with? Nothing. I want something for all my effort, all my energy. And I realize that I have I'm able to do it because I trust. I really know that. I know from experience that this is really beneficial. To just sit there and watch it all unravel. And to watch myself get caught in what I get caught in and unravel what unravels. And I hope that you all either see that in yourself or will sustain the interest and energy until you do see that for yourself so that you can really let go of the contaminants of faith, which are hope, expectation, ambition, aggrandizement. These are all contaminants. If your practice is motivated, influenced, kind of for the benefit of any of those things or fueled by hope and expectations or anticipation or anything like that, well, your faith is still a little bit, there's a little attachment there. And gradually through practice, you'll realize that it's just paying attention. And you don't have to do anything with what you pay attention to because understanding will come. Understanding will come. As you see things over and over again, you'll understand it more deeply. As the mind gets more collected, you'll see in a more refined way. And ultimately, when we sit, we suffer. We see the mind that suffers. We see the body that's suffering. And while we initially don't like it, we eventually see how to experience the mind and body without suffering. And this is really liberating. And this is the direction that our practice takes us, that we find another way of holding, or another way of holding our experience, our mind and physical, mental, emotional experience that is not so demanding. It's not so, you know, we're not demanding anything of it other than just to be present with it. And then we can see it all unfold. So it takes this kind of trust that you don't have to do anything. You don't have to even experience anything particular or it will happen anyway. But what this requires is the energy to just show up. Just show up moment after moment for whatever's going on. Whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, painful, physical, mental, emotional, subtle, gross, familiar, novel. It doesn't matter what, and it will in time cover the whole range. But the energy that's required is just show up for whatever appears. Utejaniya, Sayadaw Utejaniya, a monk that I'm practicing with these days, says that right effort in practice is perseverance. Just persevering. Just being there for whatever comes up. And I really appreciate that, because it doesn't require greater or less. How do you greater or less perseverance? It's just It's just persevere. So if you want to know if you're making right effort, are you persevering with the way things are? That's good. So today we covered we talked about the first two of the five controlling faculties, spiritual faculties, by practicing the third, which is awareness. And tomorrow we'll talk more about the fourth and fifth spiritual faculties, collectedness of mind or samadhi, concentration, and wisdom, the unfolding understanding that comes that eventually liberates the mind from conditioning. So get a good night's rest. Any last comments or questions or anything you want to share? Yeah, Charlotte.
This is a little thing. I noticed that when I got myself lost in thought, my tongue goes to the top of my mouth. And I never knew that before until today.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been practicing, Charlotte?
Oh, about 20 years.
Well, you know, there's something to be discovered. If we pay attention, we will discover something. Yeah. The comment was that she noticed that when your mind is wandering, her tongue goes to the top of her mouth. Now, you hold your tongue to the top of the mouth. There's some tension there, isn't there? There's going to be. I mean, you might not notice it for the first minute or two, but you keep holding it there, and there's some tension. You know, and so does the tension come before the thought? Or does the thought condition the tension? That's always a good one to investigate. Whether your tension is in the tongue to the mouth or in the clenching of the fist or the warming of your ear with your right shoulder or whatever else you're doing that's kind of a chronic holding pattern. And I think this is what it is. You know, unseen thoughts or unobserved, unaware thoughts are reflective of unconscious holding patterns in the mind, reflected in tension in the body. So, as you find tension and discomfort and pain in the body, well, you will find holding patterns in the mind. It's good. We can get symptomatic relief from, adjusting our posture, getting a massage, and that's good. But the holding is still there. And so you have to look at the mind to see the holding pattern and to let go of the holding pattern of the mind. We can let go through exercise and yoga and things like that, and we should do that. But the real holding is in the mind. And for that, you have to practice awareness. Other comments? Yeah.
Again, just that something that I've been noticing recently is related to that, which is really noticing when I realize that the mind has been really caught up in something.
Mm.
The very next thing I realize is this holding in the arms.
Yeah.
And what I just find interesting is that it immediately relaxes, but not because I tell it to relax. It's
sure.
Like the awareness does it, and then
the awareness of the thought conditions the relaxation of the body.
It just happens.
Yeah.
But then the other thing that was just interesting is that occasionally I can actually, watch the mind spinning, and it can be seemingly the same exact thoughts and the same spinning.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm aware of that spinning, this tension doesn't happen, even though the mind is still doing off on its thing about planning.
Yeah, but if you're aware of it planning, or you're aware of it spinning, the body doesn't get conditioned into tension.
It seems like the same.
This is your understanding. This is, and we'll talk more about this tomorrow. How our we really want to own our own understanding. And this is your understanding, that when this happens, this is what happens. because through our own understanding and continued practice, we will refine our understanding. So if that's wrong, you'll find out. You don't need me to tell you or anybody else. You'll find out if you keep paying attention. But that's an accurate, that's a pretty accurate vocalization of what I observe also. That when I'm aware of thinking, the tension doesn't get kind of locked into the body.
I noticed at some point this time when I was beginning to feel as if I were falling asleep or getting really sleepy, and instead of pulling myself back as I would normally do, I just let myself sink into that. And it wasn't sleep.
It wasn't sleep.
It wasn't sleep. It was simply, it was just quiet. But
Should have explored that earlier. Why struggle with relaxation? Wait a minute, what's wrong with this? Yeah. No, sometimes, you know, we just need to give ourselves permission to feel what we feel. Really. You know, we're feeling something. You have permission to experience it fully. And I often try to remind people that whatever you're experiencing is okay. Just feel it. Just know it. Just know that that's what you're experiencing. Yeah. We have so many sensors and editors conditioned into our experience. We live a very small range of what it is possible to experience as a human being. And religion has put those sensors in, and our parents and the legal system has just kind of cut off from joyful exploration just parts of the human experience. It just says, it's not okay to go there. It's not safe to go there. It's not okay. It's bad or whatever. If you want to free the mind, you gotta go there eventually and see it all. And you know, face the fears and face the shame and face the, you know, the devil, whatever it is for you or whatever is conditioned in there. And we can. Awareness can handle everything, anything, everything. It's a journey. That's why it's a journey. A journey of discovery.